some recent court cases have raised the question, should pets have the same legal rights as people? Some animal advocates are happy about the legal trend, but others, including some veterinarians and small business owners, are pushing back. Today, cats and dogs are the most legally protected animals in the United States.
David Grimm joins us now. He's a deputy news editor at Science and the author of the new book, Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you tell a story that gets at the trend of pets being given legal rights that are more like a person's legal rights. Could you tell us the story about the dog Ruthie, who was hit by a car, and what happened?
Well, this was a dog that was hit by a car a couple years ago, and what happened was that the owner had left to go shopping, she had a maid service come in. The maid service came in. The dog escaped from the house, and the dog was hit by a car. The dog was killed. When the owner returned home, she found the dog dead, I believe, under her dining room table. And she sued not only for her emotional distress, but for the emotional distress of her daughter. I think she sued for about $100,000. She ended up recovering about $65,000, and the dog had been purchased for less than $300.
So what does this signify to you, that she was able to get almost, you know, her entire sum, $65,000, for the loss of a dog?
Well, I think it really shows that how far cats and dogs have come in the eyes of the law. Just a century ago, cats and dogs were considered so legally worthless, they didn't even qualify as property. If somebody killed your dog or took your dog, you couldn't do anything because they weren't legal property. It was basically as if you had not broken the law at all. Of course, that's changed. Dogs and cats are now property in the United States. They're, in fact, the most valued animal property that we have. But some courts are starting to treat them not so much like property. A lot of us, in fact, most of us see our cats and dogs as family members, and you're starting to see that trend in courts as well as in this case, where if the judge was just treating this dog like a piece of property, they would probably give the woman $300 because that's what she paid for her dog. But by granting these emotional distress damages that are in the tens of thousands of dollars, they're really acknowledging that this isn't just a piece of property like a toaster or a couch, but they're really acknowledging this familial relationship that we have with our pets.
So how big a trend is this, that pets are being seen by some courts as having rights more like people's?
It's hit or miss. There's definitely been a lot more cases like this in the last 20 years than there have ever been before. There have been veterinary malpractice cases that have been awarded for tens of thousands of dollars. You're seeing custody cases over cats and dogs where a judge will decide what's in the best interest of the cat, where will the dog be happiest, which you would never do for a couch or a table, but you're seeing judges do that for cats and dogs. We also have every state in the country has a felony anti-cruelty law that covers cats and dogs. So if you abuse a cat or a dog, you can be, in some states, fined up to $125,000 and put in jail for up to 10 years. So it is becoming more prevalent, the protections and some might say the rights that we're giving these animals, but that doesn't mean by any stretch of the imagination that you're guaranteed, especially in a case like Ruthie's case, that you're going to get a settlement like that. That is happening more, but it's still not happening all the time.
You write about a case that's to the contrary in Texas, where it was pretty much the opposite sort of scenario. Can you tell us about that?
Exactly. Yeah, there was a case in Texas also a few years ago, and this was a case where a dog got lost, a family dog got lost, got picked up by a shelter. The shelter accidentally euthanized the dog instead of waiting for the owners to come pick it up. And then what happened was that the owners sued just for the sentimental value of the dog. So they sued, I can't remember for how much, it was probably a few thousand dollars, saying, even though this dog, we may have bought this dog for, a few hundred dollars, but this dog was like a family member. And in Texas, for sentimental value, you can get that award if somebody comes and destroys your grandmother's wedding dress or they destroy a photo album. You can actually recover sentimental damages beyond the market value. But when this case went to the Texas Supreme Court, you had groups like the American Veterinary Medical Association filing briefs that basically said, do not award sentimental damages for the death of this dog. If you do that, it's going to be a very slippery slope where we're going to start to have a flooding of the courts with malpractice suits and more suits like we saw in the Ruthie's case. And that's exactly what the Texas Supreme Court did. They denied that claim. And now, as the law stands in Texas, you can actually recover more if somebody destroys a picture of your dog than if they destroy the dog itself. So it's definitely gone both ways.
So this has been by no means sort of been decided in the court of public opinion or in the court of law. You hear a lot about, you know, people talking about their pets as their fur babies, as their children,
right.
All of these different things. There are pet spas now. Is that sort of what's behind the drive to see pets more like family members, like people?
Exactly. And I think the trend definitely started in the home. We've long considered cats and dogs pets, but it's really only been in the last couple of decades that we've really started to treat them and view them in a very broad, socially acceptable way as family members. In fact, more than 80% of owners refer to themselves as their cat or dog's mom or dad. More than 80% would be somewhat or very likely to risk their lives to save their pet. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite stats is more than 50% of owners, if they had to live out their days on a desert island, would rather live out their days with their pet than with a human companion. So, you know, we've really come quite a ways in viewing these animals, not just as pets or even companions, but as family members. And I think what you're seeing in the courts and even in legislatures is that politicians and judges have started to catch on, and probably because they have pets themselves that they treat like family members, and they're maybe no longer comfortable with laws or rulings that treat these animals like a toaster.
Well, it's an interesting thing because the United States is far from being the most protective of animals. If you look at some of the laws in the EU protecting animals, you know, looking at more like the great apes, for instance, there are more protections afforded there. But here, it's pets that seem like they're getting the most legal protection. How do you account for the difference?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's definitely different in different countries. I think in most Western countries, or at least in a lot of the Western countries in the developed world, you do see a lot of protections for cats and dogs that you don't necessarily see for other animals. It's interesting because the groups in the United States that are pushing for more rights for pets are also pushing for more rights for chimpanzees and other animals, but they've had a lot more success with cats and dogs. And I think that's not terribly surprising considering the relationship that we have with our pets, that we don't necessarily, even though I think a lot of us appreciate that elephants and chimpanzees and other animals like that are very intelligent and worth protecting and saving, I think we just don't have the emotional bond with those animals like we do with our pets. And I think that's especially why you're seeing in places like the United States so many laws that protect pets that don't necessarily protect other animals.
It is interesting looking at the post-Katrina landscape, Hurricane Katrina, when there were so many animals that ended up in shelters and needed to be adopted. I remember Anderson Cooper talked a lot about the dogs there.
Right.
And things changed because of that.
Exactly. Well, one survey suggested that 44% of the people that didn't evacuate during Katrina didn't evacuate because they're pets. They would have rescuers come to their houses in boats and helicopters, and the rescuers would say, "We can't take your cat or your dog." And the people would say, "Well, then I'm staying behind. They're a member of my family, and I'm not going to leave my family behind." And unfortunately, a lot of those people died. So a lot of the people that died in Katrina died because they stayed behind for their pets. And I think in the aftermath of Katrina, politicians really wised up to that idea. There was a federal law passed in the United States in 2006 called the Pets Act, which basically impels rescue agencies to save pets as well as people. It really recommends that you can't just go in there and save people, because if people are going to stay behind because of their cats and dogs, you need to save their cats and dogs too.
We're talking right now with David Grimm. He's the author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs, about the trend to extend pets the rights of people. And we want to know what you think about this. Are cats and dogs like people? Does the personal anguish that some people feel when their pets die make the pets more like family members than animals? And is this a trend that could slow down animal research and leave vets and businesses vulnerable to lawsuits?
You can let us know what you think by joining the conversation at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're back now with David Grimm, the author of Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs, about the trend to extend pets the rights of people.
What do you think? Should pets have personhood? Are they more like family to you than animals? If you were forced to make a decision in an emergency, whether to leave your pet behind or to stay with them, what would you do? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And let's go now to the phones and talk to Kathleen in Delafield. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Thank you for letting me voice my opinion. I just lost my little buddy, my dog of 7 years.
I'm sorry.
And me too.
Yeah.
But the thing is we're finding out more and more about animals than we, you know, gave them credit for years ago. And they are a very integral part of the family. So it's important to not just, you know, push them off as, well, it's just a dog, as some people think. It's almost, the loss is like a child. So I just wanted to let people know.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kathleen, for calling and sharing your experience. Again, sorry for your loss. And David, there's a pet owner saying that her dog was like, it was like losing a child. Is that typical of what you hear?
Yeah, I think it is very typical. I think it used to be that, you know, when somebody would say something like that, or somebody would say, you know, I just spent a couple $1,000 on chemotherapy for my cat, you know, the society would sort of view them as the crazy dog person or the crazy cat lady. I don't think that's where we are anymore. I think that it's, you know, just based on the statistics I just gave you a couple minutes ago, I think it's broadly socially acceptable now to really view these animals as members of the family, to have funerals for them, to leave money for them in our wills, to try to get them rescued in natural disasters. So I think we've really moved way beyond the crazy cat lady, the crazy dog person. This is really where society is right now.
And let's go back to the phones. We've got Mike with us in Kenosha. Hey, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to say that you know, I'm an animal lover. I grew up on a farm, and I at one point in time we had four dogs and a bunch of cats, and I love animals. But I really, and I think it's great that people get tied in with their pets to a degree that they do. But we already fail in so many ways to meet the needs of the human members of our community, that any diversion of resources that we've got that politically are available to pay for advancing human society really should be limited to paying for that, and not diverted to pay for the protection of animals. That without recognizing our responsibility to our fellow citizens, even if it is the emotional need of those fellow citizens to save their pet, that we're making choices each time, and those choices include things like not paying for educational opportunities for small children, not paying for health care for small children, not paying for elder care, not protecting the elderly from victimization. I mean, we're making those choices every time we spend money on something else.
All right. Thanks a lot for your thoughts, Mike. And what about that perspective, David? Putting people first, we're clearly not serving all the people in our society. We can't take care of everyone, so that is where the priorities should go.
I mean, I think it's a valid concern, and you hear that a lot, that, you know, oh my gosh, we're prioritizing animals above people. I guess what people on the other side would say to that is that you know, these animals really have become part of our society, so it's not just like, let's spend money on our society and not spend money on these animals. These animals really are part of our society. You know, the woman that just called, this is like her child, you know, and there are studies that have shown that cats and dogs are very important for our health, that they can lower blood pressure. There are cats and dogs going into nursing homes now and helping alleviate symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. We have more than 2,000 dogs serving in the U.S. military, and I think that General David Petraeus said they were one of the most valuable assets the military has ever had. So I think it would be, you know, I think we have to be careful about saying, well, you know, passing these animals off as just sort of trivial things, which I don't think the caller was doing at all. But I do think that they've become so ingrained in our society that I don't think that spending money on them or protecting them is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I think a lot of this comes back to help us as humans in the end.
And we can hear from more of you right now, 800-642-1234. Curious if you would sue over an accident, maybe like the one we heard about where a cleaning company let your pet out, they were hit by a car. Would you sue? Would you consider that something that would be within your rights? Would you consider that pet that was killed a member of your family? And what about rescuers? Should they be as concerned about pets? Should there be a place for pets within that rescue boat, that rescue plane, along with the people? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll go next to Susie, who's joining us in Toma. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's so funny that you should be talking about dogs, because we just took our dog to a doggy resort because he's going on vacation and we're going to be gone for a few days, and I will tell you, it's very difficult to get into this doggy resort. You have to look at a month to 6 weeks ahead of time to reserve your room, because it's a very popular place to go. But I agree with, if something happened to our dog that with the negligence of a housekeeper or something like that, that we, our family would be extremely upset, and that we would probably look at a negligence and a suing. And we've discussed about what would happen if we needed to be rescued, that we wouldn't leave our dog. We just wouldn't leave him. He's brought so much joy and pleasure to my home and to our neighborhood that it would be a tragedy if something happened to him that wasn't prevented. We have also included him in our trust. Our children are growing up, and they have their own families and their own pets. And I shouldn't say it this way, I don't care to have our dog. So we have him in our trust that we have arranged with the puppy resort to take him as either a permanent resident or to find some loving human for him. And this isn't unusual. This is very, very common. So, you know, animals are very important to many, many people. They don't substitute for our children or our grandchildren, but they're just a joy and a pleasure.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Susie, for calling up and telling us about what you've done for your dog. And really, a lot of thought put into Susie's dog. They have a nice experience for their dog when they go on vacation, and they've accounted for a place for their dog to go in their will as well. And that really sounds like the face of our evolving feelings about cats and dogs.
Exactly. And, you know, this idea of being able to leave money to your animals has become legally enforceable now. Before 2000, if you left money to an animal in a trust or a will, a judge could void it, especially if a relative contested it. Now it's the law in most states that you can leave money to your animals, and even there's the potential for, if somebody contests that, the judge may even appoint a lawyer for that animal. So you could have a lawyer representing a dog or a cat in a courtroom fighting for their share of the will. And, you know, some people might sort of see that as ridiculous, but it's getting back to the owners, like the caller that just called, and just saying, you know, this pet is a member of the family. I want to make sure that if something happens to us, this pet's going to be taken care of, that he or she is not going to end up in a shelter or on the street. So it really gets back to reinforcing this bond and finding ways to support and honor this bond that we have with these animals.
David, what is the next frontier of this? If we're seeing this trend right now of the courts increasingly looking at pets as having more rights, more akin to people, what comes next? What's the next step?
Well, I think we're at this really interesting turning point, because some groups and some people are definitely pushing for more rights for these animals, for them to be able to do even more in the legal system than they can now, to make them even more like children or even like people in a court of a law. But you have a lot of groups fighting back, the American Veterinary Medical Association, research organizations, farm organizations that are really worried about the impact on small businesses. Veterinarians are worried about getting slapped with $10,000 or more malpractice suits, which has already happened. Biomedical researchers worry that if we start viewing cats and dogs like children today, what's to stop us from viewing lab rats like people tomorrow? And farmers obviously concerned the same could happen to cows. So you're seeing a backlash against this movement as well. And it's really going to be interesting to see how this all plays out over the next couple of decades, whether we are content to leave our cats and dogs kind of in this pet property status, or if we want to take the chance and try to move them beyond that.
And we'll go back to our phone lines. Now we've got Peggy joining us in Ironwood, Michigan. Hey, Peggy.
Hi. Yeah, I have a small boarding facility, and I do grooming there also. And I also breed on a pretty low-key basis Labrador Retrievers. This concerns me, you know, because of my businesses and the liability. And I keep my facility small so that I can do all the work myself as it is, because it's so hard to trust other people with the care of other people's dogs. And, you know, I don't take cats, but, you know, it just makes me think, well, what's going to happen? You know, I have high risk clients that are elderly dogs and dogs with chronic condition like diabetes. And, you know, what happens if they pass away while they're with me and the owner decides that I was negligent in some way? And, you know, I know of other boarding kennels that have, you know, had dogs escape and, you know, be killed. And, you know, it's just an awful thing. No one wants that kind of thing. But these are animals. They're in a high stress situation. You know, a lot of boarding kennels have to take a lot of dogs because that's how they can make enough money to support their business. I'm fortunate where I'm at home and I can do it on a very small scale.
Peggy, is this something that you're worried about could, you know, potentially shut your business down?
Yes. That you know, because of the small scale, the way that I work, I can't afford huge insurance premiums, you know, to protect our property and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, fortunately, I haven't had things like this happen, but these are animals.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Peggy. And another perspective there, this is sort of the thing that you've written about, David, that some people concerned that it could affect their livelihood, that maybe it's going too far.
Exactly. People really worried about getting hit with these multi-$10,000, $100,000 judgments in courts because the owners are treating their cats and dogs like proper and like people in the courtroom. And so that's why you have definitely seen this backlash from not just the veterinary community, but small businesses, groomers, dog walkers, just terrified that, you know, that they're going to be put out of business if something happens to an animal in their care.
And we're going to have to leave it there. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
We've been talking to David Grimm, a deputy news editor at Science and the author of the book Citizen Canine.